Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. So we are in Brooklyn right now, but we have some representation from another place quite far from Brooklyn. We are going to be talking all about the food of Taiwan and its culinary history. So back up a little bit. Taiwanese food has been in the spotlight quite a bit in the last few years. There's been hot new restaurants like Winsome in New York City, and there's been just a lot of general interest in this island's rich food traditions, from street food and its night markets to its guabao or little steam buns with pork in them. So I'm really excited to be holding a book that I so wish I had when I was working on a cookbook that I wrote about Taiwanese food, because it is such a wonderfully in-depth look at the island's rich culinary history. I keep saying that, rich history. Anyway, it is called A Culinary History of Taipei. Its two co-authors are, one of them is here. It's Katie Hui Wen Hung. Hi.
Hi, hi,
Kathy.
Thank you
for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And we also have co-author Stephen Crook on the line from Taiwan.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining. So a little bit of where and how and why did you decide to write this book about Taiwanese food history?
I didn't decide to write it. It just opportunity came along. Mm-hmm. Basically, I don't have any background about food or writing. I was made redundant. I was living in UK mm-hmm. for 25 years. I had a family. And basically, I was made redundant twice in 18 months. And just at that time, my mom in Taipei was starting to feeling a bit unwell. So I just decided to resign and come back to just see a bit more of my mother. Just at that time, a Jewish writer in California, quite established food writer, Marlena Spiler, mm-hmm. she was invited by Taiwan Tourism, and they have around the Taiwan trip, a tour, all paid for,
right.
Everything paid for. The only condition the Taiwan Tourist Board asked them to do is that when you go home, please, please write some article about Taiwan, that to say how great Taiwan is, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And I became friendly with her on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I was thinking how sad it is that Taiwan, you had to pay so much money for somebody to write about you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody otherwise would be interested
about anything.
Yeah. Anyway, so Marlena came up with a suggestion that is, not in a million years I would have imagined. She said that Katie, because from some Facebook conversation, she realized I'm very interested in history.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Marlena, it's such a shame that people just have absolutely no idea about Taiwan food. And I was totally impressed and totally wowed by its local resources and everything. And it just, people are so passionate about what they can offer. It's such a shame that, you know, people just don't know about it. And she told me that before I came to Taiwan, I have absolutely no idea what is Taiwan or Taiwan food. I just assume that it's just part of Southern Chinese food. And after that would be the Chiang Kai-shek brought in the Northern Chinese, you know, noodle culture, that sort of thing. And she said, I think maybe giving you an opportunity, you should do one. At least do one for Taiwan. And she said that I have a friend called Professor Ken Abala,
mm-hmm.
and he, at that time, he has a series of books called Food Biography of Big Cities. And at that time, he has published maybe 10 or 12, but all around Europe and America.
Okay.
The he hasn't come up with the idea of doing Asia because it's just not what he wanted to do, intended to do at that time. But Marlena said, Katie, why don't I just approach Ken? Let me just connect you two and see how it goes. Because Ken, although he has absolutely no idea about Taiwan, whatever, he's very open idea. He's a curious person. I mean, he might be interested in learning what he doesn't know before. So Marlena kindly connected me with Ken, and I was very nervous. You know, it's a thing that I never imagined that I would be doing that. So I immediately connected with Ken. I expressed my concern, my fear, my challenge, this. But he was so supportive that I felt that given the opportunity, I really shouldn't turn it down.
Uh-huh.
Because he literally just said, Katie, if you want to do one, you go ahead and do it. You just send me your proposal, and then let's take it from there. So wow. He was so supportive that I felt that it would be wrong
mm-hmm.
to turn down this opportunity. And my initial motive is really to relearn Taiwan because I've been away from Taiwan more than 20-odd years. So my initial opportunity is a fantastic opportunity to relearn Taiwan of all this development that I missed. I was absent from for 25 years. So that's the start of it. So uh-huh. I didn't start by doing it. Just lots of circumstances come together.
Yeah.
And I was given this opportunity and took it.
And
that's
now
all.
It's the first cookbook from focusing on an Asian city.
It's not a cookbook.
Food history book yeah. In this series on an Asian
Yes,
Asian
it's the first Asian city.
Place.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, how did you get involved co-writing it?
Well, I think Katie gave an excellent introduction for how the project got started, and then she mentioned she has no background in writing or anything like this, whereas I do. I've been writing about Taiwan for about 20 years, and a lot of the subjects we cover in the food book are things I knew a little bit about or mm-hmm. I'd heard about, but there were so many subjects I was curious to really learn the truth. So as soon as Katie talked about this project, you know, I was like, yeah, sign me up.
All right. Well done, guys. This is such an exciting book. And to help sort of interview you guys or maybe, I don't know, jointly be guests with you guys, I brought in a couple of experts on Taiwanese food. It is Trig Brown and Josh Koo of Winsun. So just wanted to say that you guys are here, right? You're here.
Hey guys.
Hey guys.
Okay.
We're not experts, but we definitely are.
Hardly experts.
Peanut gallery.
About learning, yeah.
So one thing that I hear asked a lot about Taiwanese food is, you know, what exactly defines it? What do you guys get this a lot? What is Taiwanese food? What is your response to that? How would you summarize it? And anyone?
Well, actually, we were talking earlier before, mm-hmm. While the other show was going on, and we're talking about the menu at Winsun
mm-hmm.
and how it's, you know, kind of this Taiwanese cuisine that we're taking from our experience eating Taiwanese food.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about Taiwanese food, we're talking about, you know, the North, the South Chinese brought over, as well as the Japanese influence and... you know, pre-colonial times kind of influence mm-hmm. On the food now and what we're doing with it in Brooklyn and specifically what Trig's doing with it and kind of introducing this cuisine to a new audience. Going back, it just, you know, it's this amalgamation of the cultural history and political history of Taiwan and what it's done to the food there. So it's quite a lot of different things.
Yeah, I feel like I always have to give a history lesson before telling.
Definitely.
Yeah, what would you say your answer is?
I guess you know, a lot of people when they ask what is Taiwanese food, you know, I kind of challenge them. You know, what is American food?
just
like Josh very eloquently said, you know, it's an amalgamation of like, cultural and political history with layers of influences. You know. I think to figure out what Taiwanese food is, you really have to look at it from a historical perspective. And once you're able to contextualize nuances and layers of influence, then you can kind of start to wade through some of the actual food look past that and some of the stories that the food and the dishes tell, because they're pretty profound.
Halfway between the process, I come up with a catchphrase, which I think I'm quite proud of. I said to people, Taiwanese cuisine should not be forcefully defined, mm-hmm. but should be delicately explained. Mm. It needs to be explained because of its complicated history. Lots of culture have complicated history, but why Taiwan needs to be explained? Because it's so unknown. Mm-hmm. It's so unknown. If you don't try to explain, people just get totally confused. I even get that from the editor. When we submit the final draft, I send it to her. Send it to him. And after one chapter, he came back and said, Katie, Stephen, I'm just totally confused. Not even get into chapter one. Because he said, I know that you have a Japanese occupation, okay. and you have some Dutch and some Spanish, you know, train passing, whatever. But I have absolutely no idea that you have Aboriginal culture, and you even had Aborigines living in your island for how many years. He said he's totally confused.
Well, there's so that too, yeah.
Yeah, so he suggested, and you have to bear in mind, he's not an average American. Mm-hmm. He's an intellectual, yeah. and he had traveled a lot. And if he says that, then you can imagine that, you know, what average American would think. So he come up with the idea that Katie and Stephen, I think you two should work on introduction, maybe mm-hmm. 10 pages or 8 to 10 page introduction to at least get people into it before, otherwise they would be, average people would be like me, totally confused. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether Stephen has something to say about this yeah. part of it.
Yeah. What do you think, Stephen?
That was something which I'm very glad Ken reminded us about, because after living in Taiwan for a long time, you know, I just kind of assumed people knew, for example, that Taiwan has an Austronesian indigenous population. You know, it's very easy to forget that people outside Taiwan who've never been to Taiwan, you know, don't know these things. And then something your other guest mentioned about the influence of history on Taiwanese food. One thing I would emphasize, one thing we learned, is it's not just the political history, the Japanese colonization and then Chiang Kai-shek coming after World War II. It's also the economic history. And for example, the profound influence of U.S. food aid after World War II. That's something that surprised us.
Wow. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that some more. So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, before, I guess, relatively recent decades, beef, wheat, these things were not eaten in Taiwan. And you do a great job of explaining that in this book. But one of the biggest dishes of Taiwan, especially nowadays, the biggest hits, is beef noodle soup, which has beef as well as wheat noodles. So that's quite a change.
Yeah, basically there are two iconic Taiwanese food that is actually influenced by American aid, which is quite a surprise to many people. Beef noodle soup and pineapple cake. So I would think I would let Stephen explain about this beef noodle soup, but then I'll do the pineapple cake. How about that, Stephen?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I often say to people, and I didn't realize this until, you know, we were researching the book, is if you order a bowl of beef noodle soup in Taiwan, it's quite possible everything in the bowl except the water is from the USA, because a lot of the beef is from the USA. The wheat that makes the noodles is from the USA. The soybean paste, which is one of the key ingredients, the soybeans come from the USA. Typically, you know, any of the vegetables,
maybe
the carrots,
not until
or the greens, you know, are imported from the USA as well. And it's something that only developed in Taiwan in the 1950s. And it would not have developed unless there was an influx of mainland Chinese. But those mainland Chinese cooks would not have really developed it without the material from the USA.
Wow. What do you guys think? I know you guys have made, Trig and Josh, an amazing version of beef noodle soup as a special.
Yeah, we special out beef noodle soup, but I think Josh's mom's family, being from Tainan in the south, we've definitely kind of framed our perspective from the south of Taiwan, mm-hmm. which has given us a little bit, lent more of a an older historical right. perspective to the food. So I think things that we were drawn to before, you know, we have specialed out beef noodle soup, but, you know,
that's not your forte.
Yeah, yeah, dishes yeah. like sure. Oajin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when we go out and eat in Flushing, we like to have the oyster noodles, you know, that have that are much sometimes more representative of, you know, Taiwanese food. From
before the 1940s, 50s.
Yeah, there's like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes oysters, pig mm-hmm. intestines, rice noodles. And, you know, these are things that you would find in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily imported or, you know, it's, you know, humble food that you would find from Taiwan. And,
right.
I think it's just, yeah, it's super totally. Interesting.
Yeah. So we need to cut to a quick little commercial break, but I want to chat more about the role of U.S. aid and also those pineapple cakes right after a quick little commercial. If I come into a party hitting raps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist. If I come into a party hitting raps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist. If I come into a party hitting raps like this.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food. And my favorite cookware is the 9-inch cast iron Le Creuset fry skillet that never leaves my stovetop. My Le Creuset recipe? Slab of bacon and some vegetables in the skillet. There is no better skillet than Le Creuset for my kind of skillet cooking. It spoils me. The heat retention is amazing. Heat a tortilla on super low heat. I even take my Le Creuset skillet with me when I travel. Bacon, quesadillas, burgers, chicken cutlets. Chefs always talk about sourcing the best quality ingredients, knowing your suppliers, using the right cookware and tools is just as important. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN. That's LECREUSET.com to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
All right, we're back chatting more with the co-authors of A Culinary History of Taipei. That would be Katie Hui-Wen Hung, as well as Stephen Crook on the line in Taiwan. All right, guys, we're all here. And we've got the chef and owners of Wind Sun Restaurant right nearby us here at Roberta's Pizza. It's also in Brooklyn. So we've got Trig Brown and Josh Koo. So we were just talking about beef noodle soup and the history of beef consumption in Taiwan is linked with U.S. aid to Taiwan. And just as a snippet from your book, chapter 3, you know, you write about how, you know, steak restaurants in Taiwan nowadays often serve this sweet corn egg drop soup. That's just like a staple. It's an appetizer. But you're right, like many other modern eating habits in Taiwan, it would have never become so established were it not for imports from the United States. In 1992, to encourage Taiwanese people to make corn soup at home, Green Giant offered substantial cash prizes for the best recipes. And this chapter goes on to describe how much America has influenced mm-hmm. today's food landscape in Taiwan rather than yesterday's. So that's a really interesting
discussion. That is the best surprise that if, especially for a U.S. reader, I think probably everybody we talk about American aid influence in Taipei, they were all so surprised, but it's a very fantastic information they wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a lot of people nowadays don't know why U.S. was aiding Taiwan. Does Stephen or Katie, do you guys want to get into that?
I guess Stephen to talk about okay. that sort of technical
yeah.
thing.
Okay, the short story is, so after when the Korean War started, the U.S. President Truman decided to support the Chinese nationalist government on Taiwan. So from 1950 to 1965, the government here in Taiwan got a lot of U.S. military and economic aid, and a lot of the economic aid came in the form of commodities, including soybeans, wheat. What's also interesting is some of the influence for beef mm-hmm. wasn't official U.S. aid, but it was beef that was brought to Taiwan to feed American soldiers, and then it was deemed to have expired. So obviously they weren't going to throw it away. it ended up being, you know, canned, eaten by the civilian population.
Okay.
Or it was diverted, you know, whoever was on the base took some of it and sold it to the civilian population. So that's a, you know, unofficial aid or unofficial transfer of material.
It's striking when you learn about all the changes in the last, say, half century or so. But as you mentioned, you know, Josh and Trigg, you specialize in older cuisine at Winsun, and there is a lot of fascinating history there too. So let's talk about Feng Li Su, the pineapple cakes that are so famous. You know, everyone who goes to Taiwan has to bring them back as souvenirs.
Mm-hmm. I just quickly add something about a beef noodle soup. If you try to imagine that beef noodle soup started with a street food, so those people are really poor people. So how can you think about it? How can they afford to buy good
beef?
So basically, as Stephen said, probably initially it started with expired beef from the U.S. soldiers in the steak. They chop it up and chop it out and make it a beef noodle soup. Or even the tins.
The tins.
Okay, so pineapple cake. The pineapple cake, the shortbread crust, the pastry we eat nowadays, is actually developed by a Russian. By a Russian aristocrat who came to Taiwan with Chiang Kai-shek. And there's a bakery called Astoria. Mm-hmm. In Taipei.
It's called Astoria?
Yeah, Astoria in Taipei, near the Cheng Hua Miao.
Is there one in Astoria, Queen? I'm just kidding.
No, it's Bo Ai Ru, I think. The story goes that the founder of Astoria is five Russian, white Russians, they called it, and one Taiwanese guy. How did it come about they meet together and develop this today's iconic pineapple cake is... Mr. Jian, this Taiwanese founder, he was in like a building trading business. So basically he bought parts and maybe make into a construction, you know, the material and that sort of thing. So he became acquainted with Flying Tiger staff. Flying Tiger staff.
Flying Tigers. Okay.
And they were stationed in Taipei. So they have dormitory. Mm-hmm. Dormitory for these Flying Tiger, you know, people. And when they were building this dormitory, somehow Mr. Jian was involved or connected with Mr. Jian. And these people say that we only want a Western toilet.
Okay.
We only want American Western toilet. We don't want any, you know, Taiwanese that sort of toilet. So that's how they became for the sort of form of friendship. Uh-huh. And that's how it all started for being on the Western toilet. So, and then Mr. Jian became acquainted with some Russians from there. And you know Russian Shanghai, they are Russian, white Russian from Shanghai. You know Russian Shanghai, some of them probably have jump Jewish origin. They are very good at doing bakery and pastry, like that sort of thing. Yeah. Now the American egg comes here that the wheat and butter and milk, they are all American egg.
Huh.
So we couldn't really say that Taiwanese didn't have pineapple cake. Of course that's a wrong thing. But the pineapple cake before American aid would be the original Chinese
type,
puff.
Yeah.
You know, like a puff pastry thing that has no butter, certainly no butter, and certainly no milk. So it's the Chinese type of thing. So this recipe was actually developed by this Russian baker and using, you know, American aid flour, butter, and whatever, during maybe 1950s.
Wow.
So it's certainly after Chiang Kai-shek troop came over.
Wow. Yeah. That's so fascinating. And it seems like...
And not only pineapple cake, almost everything today, the
sweets.
The Taiwanese style, you call it Taiwanese style cake or sponge cake.
Like a wheel cake,
Almost all of them were initially developed by this Russian baker.
So, wow. And of course, the pineapple is an indigenous fruit widely used in Taiwan, but
no, pineapple was actually, I think,
really?
I can't be sure. Pineapple probably brought in by Dutch.
Pineapples were brought in by Dutch?
Probably, yeah, I can't really be sure, but it's in the book. It's in the book. So that's the other thing that I wanted to tell you, that through research of this book, I myself was quite amazed or impressed by the fruits and vegetables brought in by Dutch. Particularly via Indonesia.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're talking 1600.
I think one important thing to add is that the Dutch were in Taiwan in the 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's not a
no,
recent
it's
thing.
True. Yeah, it's not
And
too
that
recent.
Was just quite a short period of time. But they did have a great influence on, as Katie says, introducing a lot of fruit and vegetables.
Just enough time to plant some plants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plant down, put down some roots, if you will, yeah. those Dutch, even if they didn't stick around. There's been so many changes throughout the last century, but where do you think Taiwanese food is headed now? Now that, you guys, Josh, Trigg, you guys have been back and forth to Taiwan over the last few years. Katie, Stephen, you live there. What are some new twists and turns that the cuisine is taking?
I feel like it's hard to say. Of course, it's new ish here on the East Coast. You have some businesses opening up, like you said. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be ever evolving in Taiwan. Yeah. And so in a sense, it's, probably a difficult thing to catch up to in terms of representation. But,
go ahead. It's just funny. Like, it is definitely seems new, right? But there's, there's always been a lot of Taiwanese folks in this area and, all over the country, but it's got, what's like new is the representation and the way people are representing it and claiming it. And, I think that's like what's so cool and keeps it so, adaptive and evolving is that, it kind of jumped from, there wasn't like a long period where it, kind of came into the spotlight. It just kind of like, it kind of happened very quickly. And, which definitely lends to a unique and fast paced evolving food culture, which kind of reflects how it is in Taiwan. Which,
true. Yeah. Everyone's trying to outdo one another at the night market, come up with the best things.
Yeah.
Stephen or Katie, do you have any thoughts on something evolving?
A couple of things which come to mind. One is on the food supply side. The percentage of food grown in Taiwan, which is organically grown, is growing very rapidly, and it's behind Europe, but it's quite a way ahead of the U.S., as I understand it.
Oh. Yeah.
And then on the consumption side, the percentage of people who are vegetarian or vegan is very high and seems to be growing quite rapidly. And, of course, there's a religious factor in that a lot of Buddhists are vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly not the only reason why it's growing.
Okay. What, is it also because of just general food safety concerns?
I think food safety is one. I think animal welfare is another factor. Just health as well. A lot of people are vegetarian or vegan because they think that's the best way to live longer.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And there's just so many incredible good vegetables in Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's
true. Totally.
The mountain ferns.
Can I just say something? Recently, there's a trend reviving old flavor.
Old flavors, yeah.
Yeah, reviving old flavor. So the old flavor, from my research, is basically lard.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And shallot, deep fried...
Fried shallots.
Fried shallots
and goose
fat.
Right. Yeah, that sort of thing.
and goose
so,
fat.
But this sort of cuisine probably won't go down very well with modern diner because, lard, the people sort of resisted to it. So recently...
I don't know about that. we'll see.
Yeah, so recently I researched a couple of banquet. What happened is... they got an authentic Taiwanese cuisine master coming to do his Taiwanese flavor, but team up with some modern techniques, a chef.
Mm-hmm.
So that works out very well because the young people who have, people under 40 probably have little idea what authentic Taiwanese flavor is.
Mm-hmm.
So they can enjoy that, but also they can be comfortable with what's served on the table. I give you just one example.
Okay.
Just one example. There's a Taiwanese authentic dish, a banquet dish. It's made of liver, but with cooked with lard, and very watery, with a bit of gravy and that sort of thing. Now, in this banquet I researched, they got a French chef who created something called an eight-layer pie. Now, the eight is important because in the original Taiwanese dish, there are eight ingredients in it. So whatever pie or whatever creation this French chef come up with, it has to have a number eight. So he created a French recipe, an eight-layer pie. So these are the things that it's got story. People like story nowadays. Yeah. And people like to listen to these things. And so, oh, I can relate to this bit, Taiwanese bit, and I can also relate to this French bit. So there's a trend. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, to combine the two.
Well, it sounds like a winner. Lucky number eight is a auspicious number. And we're just wrapping up here, but I know Trig is heading off to Taiwan on a flight tonight. Yeah. What are you looking forward to eating or cooking?
There's just so much on the docket.
On the list, okay.
I'm meeting my mentor. Mm-hmm. Meeting my mentor there, so we have a lot of places on the list.
Master something from him?
Just haven't gotten a chance to cook together since I left Virginia. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're not going to be cooking that much, but we'll be eating a lot together and just spending some good time. And you know, Josh and I go to this place, Halal Beef Noodle, which is definitely like a different style beef noodle soup. It's definitely not like the best beef noodle soup in Taiwan, but the you know, they have these really fluffy jangbings that are unique from my perspective.
Cool.
And I can't wait to eat that and have some breakfast at Washon
nice.
Market.
Yeah, for that upcoming breakfast joint you guys are opening.
Yeah,
can't wait for that. Well, oh my gosh, so much to talk about still, because if you do read this book, and I hope you get your hands on it, your mind will probably be blown. It's so fascinating. There's so much history behind every single food and that we didn't cover. So thank you so much to Katie.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
And thank you so much, Stephen. I know it's late
thank
there.
You. Thank
or
you
early.
Early, yeah.
Yeah. All right. And thanks, Josh and Trig.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You guys are Tweedledee and Tweedledum. All right. Thanks, Heritage. All right.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah. Thank you, our engineer, Jeet. And we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization, driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Never had no loving like this before.